Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
I ain't an activist, I'm just a man that's from America, but they still call him my African / American, but he should just be American. They say he white, but they don't call him European. They say I'm black when I fill out my application. My skin brown, I think somebody was mistaken. Why you need to know what my race is, you racist? What my skin color got to do with job placement? Shouldn't this be about skill? This shouldn't be how you feel about me, how I dress, if I pay my light bill. I can understand you wanting to know if I steal, but if I say no and I will, you shouldn't be in my grill, looking in my face, in my eyes, trying to see if I lie. Would you have taken my word for it if I would have wore a suit and tie? What if my skin was a little lighter, a little brighter, a little whiter, and I had a felony? Would you catch the case of Alzheimer's for me being who I am and you being who you are? We both know that my complexion does play a major part, and that's not fair. Let's switch gears, let me see if you like what you do. Look down on you like you only stood 2'2". Don't even read your application. You white, I call you. See, that's what y'all do, make my people feel not equal. This happened to the older generation, we the sequel. I know you think we slow, look at my ancestors, I don't think so. We did so much for this country, but you still want more. First open heart surgery, stop life, the clock to see if I'm late or not. The mail you sending, who made the box? The janitor that you look down on, who you think made the mop? George Washington, Carver's, Benjamin Banneker, all of us. No, it wouldn't be no Steve Jobs if it wasn't for Mark Dean, Charles Drew, Madam C.J. Walker, just to name a few. But y'all think that if we dumb, cage us in like we some type of animals, barely feed us, we cannibals. We feed off each other, we eat off each other. So what y'all do, devise a plan to bring down the brother man? No 40 acres, just some crack and some heroin. No mules, some rules are meant to be broken, like selling the drugs you put in the neighborhood. Y'all must be joking. Of course they smoking, of course they shooting up, of course they think they worthless. To y'all that's picture perfect.
Yeah, yeah, huh?
Black man, wake up, this is a state of emergency, my brother tried to murder me. Black man, what's up, another one just got hit up, another one just got picked
up. I'm on fire, but these hopeless feelings
popping on the weekend. We can act like it ain't a problem. Pretend like the beef ain't killing our younger generation. We need to be vegans, but where do we begin? I think the home, cuz if the child feeds mama and daddy on drugs, mama and daddy in the kitchen sipping bottles, flipping it up, loving and tripping, thugging and tripping. You shouldn't be blaming us, blaming me, I'm blaming you. You see what the blame it does? Nothing, we getting nowhere. Treadmill, dangerous. Uncle Tom made a statement, he ain't the same as us. He said he moving out the hood, cause he ashamed of us, but we ashamed of you. Tell me what kind of lame is you? In the middle of the war, you just desert your crew. If you feel some type of way, then this goes out to you. Them Condoleezas, Colin Powell's with Obama features, the Bill Cosby, Oprah Winfrey, pointing fingers. The generation before us is what did this, cause we were little babies that was born co-connected. Born to Palm Beaches, finding heroin syringes, playing hopscotch with a real crack rock, thinking that it was chalk, draw pictures on the blacktop. It's for the have-nots, the scheme to be have-gots. Get inside the game just to become the devil's mascot. Black man, black man.
Figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with K.D. Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on The Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On The Edge.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the On The Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. I am not sure, but I've just got a couple of quotes that what the beginning commentary wasn't heard. But in that case, just in case, for those of you who did hear, if it was a repeat, just bear with me. We are sending out special prayers and greetings to our panelist and activist, Deacon Betty Williams. He is dealing with a tragedy in his family at this moment where his grandson was shot by an unknown assailant 5 times. He's not doing very well. The family is hanging on prayers right now. So, Deacon, if you can hear us, we're all wishing you prayers and to you and your family. I want to thank all of my social media groups, my wonderful panelists, Al-Tariq Atkins, Taylor Jenkins, Darlene and Arlene, Erica Talbert, Professor Carlson Jones, Patrick Irvine, for all that you guys do on a daily basis and a continual basis. It's priceless to me and to those that you touch in your individual neighborhoods and on the show. So thank you all very much. To my team, Lady Diamond Elaine Yves, she is still dealing with a very long-term illness, so we are praying for her return. Monster Miles will be returning and DJ Dome Record as well. You guys are the best team a girl could have, so I appreciate you all very much. Domestic Violence series continues tonight, part 4 of 5. Tonight we are going to be addressing the abusers. And we are going to start off by saying this. In case you haven't gotten it, in case the dangers, the fatalities, in case the damage isn't enough, understand that domestic violence is not just the incident itself. It's not just that shove. It's not just that push. It is the mental damage that happens. It's the physical property damage. It's the physical damage. It's the long-term effects that your child who see it or was suffering it grows up to either repeat or to be broken, trying to figure out what to do. To those of you that sit by and watch it, enable it, it is disgusting to do. It is doing nothing but becoming more destructive to the problem. It is doing nothing but you minding your business and keeping your head into your own backyard. You doing that allows this weed to fester and to become a poison to your backyard eventually anyway. We are going to be discussing things to you abusers, about your abusers, and we're definitely going to be discussing how society on the whole breeds these abusers and how, in addition to what society has to offer, how the unique additional things that the black community deals with leads to even worse types of abuse. These are things that are never ending, and it has to come to an end. It has to come to an end, or it has to really be put down. So let's get started. A message to you abusers. You don't have the right to take away another person's essence because you haven't figured out how to deal with what's affecting yours. You don't have the right to convince somebody to sit around and pursue someone, convince them to come out of their safety zone from not trusting somebody before you who hurt them, to believe that you're going to be every bit of the prince or princess charming that you promised them you're going to be, only to lead them down to not just the same road they've protected themselves from, but a worse one, because now they have to deal with the fact that they trusted you after not wanting to trust you, that they made a second failure in a choice. Now you've brought children into the mix. Now the children are watching this. Now you have shattered every bit of the safety net that parents are supposed to give their children by showing them that the horrors of the world are not acceptable and that when they face those things, they can always come back to you. How can that happen when they're watching you be the very monster you're supposed to be protecting them from? How dare you take away something that you don't have the right to take away, this person's right to feel good about themselves, to live safely, to have freedom of choice, to have freedom to have a life, to walk out and to socialize with people. That is a God-given right. It is a right. And if God gave it to them, you don't have the right to take it away. No one person is supposed to dominate another. And in the black community, have we already enough of a war to deal with on a daily basis when all they're doing is coming after you? We don't have the opportunity We don't have the right, we don't have the luxury of sitting back and destroying ourselves to make it easier for those already trying to destroy us. How can you equate love to physical violence? How can you equate love to mental degradation? How can you equate love to control? How is it you can love someone and do nothing but instill fear with them and still feel that you are doing something good in life? How can you sit there and love someone so much that you go through whatever it takes to get them to give in to what it is you want, only to beat them and have to wait for a lip to swell, to a swelling to go down, or a black eye to heal, only to turn your mind and make them ugly so you can call them ugly in your mind? What causes such hatred and darkness in a person that they want somebody else to share the pain and the horror and the grossness that they feel going through that? Shouldn't this be something that you say to yourself, I felt horrible going through it, and no matter what, I don't want my kids to feel this. I would never put this on someone else. So now you've grown up and you've become the spineless bastard that you have been watching all along due to your mom. How could you? Is there nothing about you that's sensitive anymore? How many sorries do you have to keep telling somebody? How many times do you think sorry is going to work? How often do you think sorry works when you have taken a person's right to walk, literally and otherwise, when you have degraded your wife sexually or you have degraded your husband emotionally, when you continue on a daily basis to be a person that doesn't, whose word doesn't mean nothing, whose promises is defunct, deceptive, worthless, and now you've caused the person that you've hurt with these very promises, their trust in society, their trust in the world, their trust to move on from you, and then you have the audacity to be selfish and say, if I can't have you, no one will. We get it. You wouldn't be doing this. You wouldn't need so badly to control somebody if there wasn't something about you that makes you feel weak. And if you spent less time trying to deflect from it and trying to push up an image that doesn't belong to you, trying to be a tough guy, trying to be a strong woman, and actually deal with the problem that makes you get to this point in the first place, perhaps we would have less deaths in the family. So perhaps we wouldn't have people so angry looking for vengeance. Perhaps if you had the same strength to confront that person that put you in this bad position, now that you're old enough to do it, you wouldn't be the very punk that they were to someone you're supposed to love and move on and escape from that with. You wouldn't have lost your sensitivity and sense of value to being able to afford yourself the right to have a good life after coming from a tragedy, after coming from an atrocity. You wouldn't be giving your abuser or your oppressor power still to succeed and laugh at you as you got older and escaped the physical chains. That is what you're doing. That is what you're doing. You're creating more garbage in the world. You're telling your children that they need to do the same. You don't have the right. There's a panel, or a couple of panelists in to start this discussion, and I'm going to bring them in now. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Katie. This is Tariq calling from Dothan.
Hi there. How are you?
Okay, I just got back in from Atlanta, but I'm here now.
Well, thank you and welcome back. And hold on, there's somebody behind you. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hey, is Carlos Otobe Jones or Stalo Jenkins calling from D.C.?
Hello, Taylor. Okay, you'll be second up on the mic. Al Tariq, I have two questions that I am going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like for you to answer that. Then I'm going to go to Salo to answer it, and then I'm going to have you come back and continue your point on it. My first question to everybody that calls in tonight is, if you were talking to an abuser right now, and if you had something to say, what would you think would be the first thing you should tell them to address right now? That's the first question.
Wow, you said to tell the person who's abusing you?
Yeah, not just me.
Is that you need help. Yeah, because apparently you need something, because you don't need to be trying to abuse me in any form. So if they can't see what they're doing, or if they, you know, if it's a first-time situation, you know, because I believe what Deacon has said, you know, you can't be letting that get past you. You know, and sometimes, you know, it happens. We're human. And if it does, then, you know, it happened once. And if it's on that road where something's going to happen again, I'm probably going to have to, you know, leave them alone or tell them you need help. If you can't get help, then I can't deal with you point blank. You know,
that's,
you can't deal with what's going on with you. Mm-hmm.
And my second question would be, we all have seen the publications. We've heard the experts speak. We know what society on a whole, you know, says are the factors or the subliminal reasons why abusers become abusers. From they were in a childhood situation. They've seen it happen. They were told that that's the way to do it. We've seen that. So with that being said, what would you think would be your unique reasons, or are there any, in your opinion, that apply to the black uniquely, the black community uniquely, as to why domestic violence happened?
Well, I guess as far as in the black communities, why domestic violence happened is because, you know, we really, you know, I feel that at times that things that we can't vent, so it comes out, you know, with like, and that'll come from the feelings that's being suppressed as far as things that may be happening to us that we have no control over, you know, because a lot of times the way that the society is set up, has been set up for us, they have really degraded us. And a lot of people, we don't, as our people, a lot of us don't understand that. A lot of people tell you, oh, no, they haven't. But if you're reduced to where you can't truly take care of the black family, how can you deny that? You can't refute that for real. You know, if you're one of the ones who's holding it down, taking care of that, then that's cool. But many, if you just look at how things are, you know, it's domestic abuse, really, when you're not there for your children just as well as your mate. That's another form of domestic abuse. So if we're not together, you know, in a domestic way, that's domestic abuse. If we can't get along, that's domestic abuse. You know, and you with somebody, you had children, and y'all don't have a good relationship and things like that, that's a form of domestic abuse as well. It goes into many different areas. So you just have to, you know, we just really have to get it together, because we are in, you know, we've come from an abusive past, really, even if you look at it. You know, and especially with avenues getting cut off for the black men to be able to do certain things. You know, I've heard the certain stories of how men, they feel degraded on a certain jobs where they've had to deal with certain things. They've even had to deal with racism on a job. Some of them can take that and channel it in a positive way, and then you get others who do it in a negative way because they may start getting drunk and stuff like that, and then it can turn into, you know, what they feel really for someone else and start taking it out on the closest person to them. You know, and that's not fair, but I'm saying that's just a scenario of how things happen at times. You know, but we have to learn to be able to get over these hurdles that's in front of us in a constructive manner. Because when we don't, we get to see the results of domestic violence as far as our children killing each other in the streets and stuff like that. That's another form of domestic violence. You know, it's a big part. It's pervasive overall, you know, over a lot of aspects of our lives, you know, not just male and female. You know, it's a lot of, you know, when you say for the instance, black people killing black people, that's a form of domestic violence. You know, killing the people, because domestic violence is those who's close to you, you know, within your home. And if it's within your culture, it's still the same thing. So it really permeates a lot of the a lot of segments of our community, you know, and it must be addressed, you know, and that's all I have to say for that.
That was a lot. And you always come out with your guns oiled. I told you that lately. I don't know. You've been in the artillery shop, dude. Stalo, I'm going to get to you in just a minute. But I do want, you know what, I'm going to go to him, and then I'm going to touch on what you said. You're absolutely right. How to speak on that one. Stalo, first question. If you had to talk to an abuser, and I'm not saying just you, I mean abuser that you know, what would you say would be to them, what would you say would be something that they must immediately deal with? And that's number one, and then answer the question, and then I'll repose part B.
Well, number one, I think they need to deal with something that I'm dealing with for hearing the question. You know, the burden that it bears on our race, So, you know, not to say that anyone's a disgrace to our race, but in varying degrees, we all do things that aren't in the best light of who we are as character. But the domestic violence, the domestic abuser, the ones who abuse women, and the ones who abuse the ones that are close to them, in varying degrees, that's the only type of violence that is black on black. All right? Everything is domestic violence. So the ones that choose to make a psychological habit of it, see, I think they should first be thankful that we don't call insane asylums on people anymore to come pick people up first. And not just them. I'm saying a lot of us. All of us got issues. I got issues. We all got issues. But I'm going to tell you, just remember, we don't call people to come pick up crazy people no more. You lucky. That's another thing. So you have a privilege even being out here like this. And as I said, the burden on the race that it bears. There's a racial burden that this bears now. If you're abusing our women, if you're succumbing to the system in such a way, you know, and when we harbor so much hate, the domestic violence is so prevalent, you know, whose domestic are we talking about? Theirs or ours? Are we talking about a collective worldly domestic? Because what are you contributing to this society? Any of the societies we can mention right now, the Greater World Society, United States, Black Community, you know, this generation, keep breaking it down. Look at you. Look at who you chose to be. Now, that's just to bring some perspective on it because I'm not down with it, you know. And, you know, first of all, this is what the children that I deal with every day, this is what they're dealing with. This is the type of emotional trauma. It's traumatic things. Okay, we do have to give some type of compassion to it because as human beings, we have to remember those who abuse have been abused, and those who are abused can abuse.
Absolutely.
Now, this is possible. So there is some element of it that was involuntary. You know, some element of being abused is involuntary, most definitely. However, those people that are right now oppressing others at this moment, you know what I mean? There's people who know psychologically they are fucked up, but will mess with other people who are just fine. Then you're lucky we don't call them people to come pick them up no more.
You're absolutely right. So I'm going to go to part B, and then I'm going to address both of you. Part B. We already know all the publications about why abusers become abusers. You just mentioned one of the main things, okay? How do those things, in addition, or do you feel that there are unique circumstances in addition that contributes to black domestic violence?
Ooh, yeah, repeat that for me. I'm sorry.
Do you feel that in addition to what the medical journals say, what we've heard from advocacy groups and all these things, are there additional unique things that causes or that contributes to black domestic violence in our community.
Yes, yes, yes. Within our community here, like y'all stated earlier, in our community, we have a lot of suppressed frustration, and we live in a society that does not acknowledge the fact that we are hurt people. You see, the thing is, when people have been denied for so long, sometimes they start to inflate their own importance, right? To an extent. Now we're talking about individuals. Now we're talking about especially abusive individuals. But we as a people, now stepping outside of that, we as a people have been steadily abused, steadily oppressed, and no one is acknowledging it. So we have so many frustrations as a people. Oftentimes, we the ones bringing them into the household first. That's why we're so much more affected, you know, by the media in a negative way than all the other, people that are imaged on the TV screen. It affects us a little bit more because of the fact that we have been denied even the right to be accurate, to be accurate about who we are, to be accurate about what we did to this country, to be accurate about what we did for this world, you know. So because of all of that denial, all of that, because of all of that frustration pent up deep inside, some of us, and I dare I say some of the weaker ones, might choose to channel that energy as some form of abuse towards the ones that they love because they haven't been told how to love. But the thing about it is, one of my brothers told me today, and it's so true, that money moves. Money moves, everything moves, but love does not move. Love does not move. All that crap that they doing with their mind, trying to get back to this point or back to that point, none of that matters. There's nothing that you can do and do. See, the thing is, a lot of people are bound in their minds. You don't have to be in this situation, you know, talking to the abuser. But how dare you impose it? You don't have to be in a situation, but how dare you impose it? That's what you look like.
Absolutely, Al-Tariq. I'm sorry, Stelos. Listen, guys, I'm just a little worried about Deacon's family at this moment, so I'm a little off. Again, you guys all know the situation, and we're sending our prayers out to him on the air. I want to address what both of you said, okay, and I'm going to expand a little bit. To you abusers, Let me not be unclear in the fact that we acknowledge that compassion needs to be given to you. You need to understand that while everybody understands what is that nobody is born or intends to be a mean person, but it's very hard for us to see your pain when all you're doing is inflicting it. Now, I want to address what you said, Al-Tariq. You said so many things that nobody thinks about. Domestic abuse is so much more than just what people write about, the journal, the case studies, you know, the surveys, the news articles. It's so much more. It's so much more than even what we've been speaking about in this last week. There is so many other forms of it, so many little subliminal and exponential problems that come from it, that some of them can't ever be repaired. We spoke about how even therapy is not a guarantee, because while a patient can act like they're responding to the treatment, to the therapy, to the talks, while they might show some positivity, some turnaround, there's no guarantee that what you see is really what they've resolved themselves with. There's no guarantee that that person really has regained their self-esteem, or that that abuser has truly learned the error of their ways and walked out to be a better person. They can still leave your office and go out and think about something else and then snap again. And some of these abusers are not as quick to be so, you know, shoot from the hip. Some of them are very calculating. That's a sociopathic type. The ones that are charming at parties. The ones that will get to know your mother and your father. That will win the hearts of everybody around you. You guys have seen Tyler Perry's family reunion. You saw when Blair Underwood was the charming person and then smiled at everybody. And as soon as the guests were over, he beat the hell out of his woman. Whatever their problem is, it has to be addressed. You know what? It has to get to a point where we need to be able to show them that we understand. But then at the same time, everybody involved, that's friends, that's family, that's parents, needs to understand that they have to send the message that regardless of all of that, you don't have the right to annihilate a loved one. You don't have the right to put some poison out onto the world because you don't know how to handle your problem. Too many mothers are enabling their grown-ass sons by allowing them to beat wives in front of them. Too many mothers and fathers are allowing their daughters to talk like crazy to their partners because they don't know how to deal with some childhood trauma. Too many of those parents that either suffered through it and did nothing or did it and did nothing and got away with it, too many of them are not reminding themselves that they are seeing this manifest in their offspring and that this is the time for them to use their own mistakes to show their kids that this is not the way to do it. I made this mistake. It was my problem. It wasn't the problem of the people I hurt, but yet I hurt them. Too many of them are walking out believing they're entitled to something that they didn't earn or that they destroyed. Now, in terms of the uniqueness of what society already says and all the normal and obvious factors as to how abusers on a whole become abusers, unique to the black community is this. Society on a whole has advocacy groups. Society on the whole has advocacy groups that are trying to restore, repair, rebuild, and renew their own. Blacks do not have that. I don't care about how many of you want to call in and do your little stuff as you do. I'm sick and tired of people who don't understand because they've never lived it. We don't have it. And we are not in a position, nor are we thinking in a position, to do it for ourselves. Everything that they have to release their power with, they're getting it with real support, with real love, with real nurturing. We don't have that because they're too busy trying to split up our families, to turn each other's support network away from each other. They're stripping us from the media. They're stripping us in jails. They're shooting us on sight. They're releasing their own reports stating that they don't even see our children as children because we're big in size or whatever the case is. They don't even view their children as children. They're not bringing our black people into therapy so that they can help them restore, repair, rebuild, and reconnect with themselves. They're bringing our black people into therapy so they can medicate them, so they can label them, so they can put a bipolar, a ADHD, a ADD, deficit disorder, and make them lobotomized. That's what they're trying to do. They're not offering that problem about a lost employment that usually most men, their pride gets in because they have nothing left when they can't provide. They're not offering that because they're too busy telling you you're not worth it. So what do they offer? Either some carrot on the stick and media pimping, because that's what I call it, where they sit there and say, we know what your problem is and here's a big check. All you have to do is jump over and curse out your wife. All you have to do is come in and say that you slept with 50 men and don't know who the father of your child is. Cry a little bit to make it look good. All you have to do is dress like a thug and show your ass cheeks and put your belt down to your knees and walk like you're stupid and talk like you don't have any sense. Act like you didn't go to school. You don't know what reading is. All you got to do is go back into your neighborhood and tell the world that we're not the big, bad, white monsters that they think we are. We're not going to really not be not monsters, but you know what? We need you to do that. Oh, and by the way, beat your wife while you're at it. Don't
right.
worry
That's
about
exactly
what's
going
to happen because we're going to give your kids access to have sex so they can breed more kids to come into confusion. And you guys ain't going to say anything because then you won't have the money. Let's take your black success icons and let them be our puppets. That's where we're at. And I'm going to tell you abusers again. Yes, daddy may have pounded your mom. Yes, your mom may have beaten you. Yes, you may have been the product of a single-family home where you look just like the parent that left and you've gotten the resentment and all of that stuff. You probably have been treated horribly. Maybe you were one of many that was a stepchild in the situation, not by blood, but by treatment. But guess what? You don't get the right to grow old and make everybody else in the world pay for that. If you can't get the idea in your head that this is a horrible feeling that you wouldn't inflict on anyone else, then go get help before you ask somebody else to join in your life and commiserate with you. The idea is for you to grow old, escape, and do different. That's the idea. It's for you not to be yet one more poisonous weed in that garden. There is something that I must read. I've got two listeners, and I mean, I know you guys have heard one of these already, but when a person in domestic violence is requesting this by a private message, there's a reason. And I really need to read off, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, the domestic violence poems that were written by myself. However, there's also a new one that was brought, and there is a request. And you abusers need to hear this too. Okay. The first one is called I Wish. And this is a letter from a victim to his or her abuser. After that, there's a new one that's just been written today, and it needs to be written to the other, I mean, read to the other person. So, to Jacqueline and Rebecca, I'm going to read you the first one that you requested. I hope it helps, and I hope that Paul is listening. And then over to you, let me make sure I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Adelina. I will read you the new one. So this is called I Wish, Letter from a Victim, written by myself in October of 2013. I wish I knew why I have to figure out this part. Why did you seek me out, pursue me, convince me to trust, just to break my heart? Was there a sign on my head that said desperate or kick me? Did I invite you in and hand you the knife that you used to repeatedly stick me? And why did you use God as a front to secure a place in my life, only to fill it with grief, humiliation, and strife? What's missing in your life that makes you so desperate for control? Then you make it your mission to break apart the one who loved you when they made it their mission to keep you whole. When did the light for me in your eyes become so darkened by hate? After promising me a great destiny, you sentenced me to a hellish fate. I gave you my heart as the wind to help you soar, and you fly over my head while you keep me crawling on the floor. I may never know why you picked me for your game, but I know that for me, love will never be the same. So that's for you, Jackie and Rebecca and Paul. I hope that that worked, and I would like to go over now to Adelina, and Al-Tariq, and Stalo. This one was written 2 hours ago by myself. This one is called In Just One Moment, and to you abusers, this is strictly for you. In Just One Moment, it's called. It's written by myself. It says, it took a little time for you to get my name. It took a little more time to get my number, just the same. But time was no problem for you. You endured till you scored. You promised to love me beyond my pain that kept you on the other side of my door. You seemed perfectly happy to wait until I let my defenses down. You wooed me, defended, and slayed all of my dragons until you were the only Prince Charming around. But again, you showed me time was not the enemy. You said no clocks for us exist. You promised me a forever filled with joy, and you even sealed it with a kiss. But in just one moment, you killed the perfect deal. It took only a moment to strike me and created a bruise that needed to heal. In just one moment, you spoke a word that left me wondering why. You took all of that time to make me smile, only to repeatedly leave me to cry. In just one moment, you annihilated something you had no right to take. You destroyed my human essence, security, and trust, and you left me a broken mess in its wake. In just one moment, I was left in shock, trying to decide what it is that went wrong. How did I wind up in a disaster area when I followed the trail of a love song? In just one moment, what you offered as my promised land was single-handedly destroyed by you with a strike of your own hand. And why didn't you take a moment to address your subliminal shame instead of trying to deflect from it by bringing in others to share your misery and your pain? Take that moment to think of others before you take away their choice, because in just one moment it all comes crashing down, and now the one you promised to love forever is forever a victim trying to find their voice. I'm praying that all of you get that. I'm praying to you abused out there that you get it. I'm praying to all of you perimeter people that's in the abuser's life, that you guys stop patting your brothers on the back when they got their wife or their bitches under control, because it's not funny, because that person could wind up finding a sister of yours. Your child could be there one day to see this happen. You men, stop trying to hide from the fact that they got it from you and teach them through your mistakes. You women, stop enabling your son. Stop turning your head and shaking your head when your daughters are screaming at the person that they're supposed to be loving forever in front of your grandchildren. All of you law enforcement officials, stop turning your back and treating domestic violence like it's just another thing that needs to be handled within the home. All of you people with this, what goes on in this house stays in this house mentality, burn it. You abusers, stop looking for all of those people with the false bravados to tell you that you're doing the right thing or making you feel like you're some big person that's out there because your fist in a woman's face or in your child's face, or you ladies emasculating your men. You're not big people. You're just as bad as the people that caused you to be where you are.
Yes, you are the same.
There's a panelist coming in. Allow me to bring them in 1 second. Hi, welcome to the On the Edge Show. Wait a minute. Okay. Welcome to the On the Edge Show, caller. You're on the air. Hello?
Guess what?
Okay. All right, the caller's phone number ends in 3517.
Huh.
Okay. Okay, Stalo, were you trying to say something?
I mean, I was saying exactly what you said, to burn down the Babylonian rule that we living in now. Burn it all down, because it's all crazy. You know, the patriarchy, right? And the whole male dominance thing, and the whole any dominance, like you said, and the women abusing their sons, and the things that's going on here, it's all disgusting. And bear the shame of the race. Because that's shameful to us. Because we are supposed to be building. You know, we build now. You know, we build now and bear the shame. You know, and as we build, you keep bearing that shame. As long as you choose to bear it. You know, that's horrible. You know, and people, the thing is, there are those that love all of us. You know, and, you know, that's really, really disrespectful to them.
Yeah. Dr. Reed, do you want to expand?
Yeah, I'm just really feeling that those poems you wrote, you know, and, wow. But we have to be able to see and understand the damage that, you know, been caused, you know, to many of us, and at the same time, the damage that, you know, we can cause to people, you know. And just like my mother always told me, always try to look through the eyes of empathy, you know, and to always go by the golden rule. And I think that a lot of that has been misplaced with other things that shouldn't really be there. And, you know, I just feel sad for people who's like that. You know, like I said, my dad, you know, he was in a situation like that, and then he wound up losing, you know, the love of his life, my mother, you know, because of you know, trying to get in that phase where he was going to try to be abusing her like that. But, you know, after they got into it like one or two times, she never returned to him. You know, and on his deathbed, he told her she was the best thing happened to him almost 30 years later on his deathbed. You know, and it's really sad, you know, because a lot of times, you know, the person just doesn't have it together, you know, and then you have, or you can even have those who have it together, but in their head, they're just not right, period. They love to, you know, sometimes be miserable. They can look like they have it all together, but they really can be a person whose heart is a very hard heart either, you know, and on that level, you're messing with someone who's on like that, like psycho and sociopathic type level. You know, we have to be very mindful of the people that we get with, because you have crazy men and you have crazy women that's out here. You have broken-hearted men and broken-hearted women who've never learned how to get over their issues that they've had from other people who they've encountered even. You know, so it's just a bunch of hurt that's going around, and we have to start focusing on healing. Because without healing, the hurt will continue. You know, whether if it's in ourselves as an individual, or you know, as collectively as our people, as we have mentioned. You know, we have to learn to grow beyond the hurt. And I feel that we are still stuck. People tell you all the time when you're trying to be a conscious brother, says, "Well, y'all stay stuck in the past too much." I've seen a program one time where this older white guy, he said, as of today, he said, the past is the present. And that was so deep to me. I said, man, I know that I'm not wrong when I point out things of the past because it affects you today. We all come from our past. Because when you're even in court, what do they do if they want to bring up certain things about you, your character, or whatever? They start out from the things you did that led up to it. So you have to be aware of what is going on in people's lives. And you have to even get to know. I think a big part of messing up with someone is not actually knowing their history before you come into things with them, especially nowadays. A lot of us, we get with people, and we don't really know nothing about them and their family and all that. We just fall for those kind words and those kind actions at the time. You know, I think it should be more drawn out as far as before you get with somebody, because some people are very good at smiling in your face but harboring ill things for you. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. Altarik. You know, we spoke about the prevention aspects in the earlier part of the series this week, or last week, I should say. But I'll say this. There's not an abuse. There's very few abusers that are out there doing it because they just feel like doing it, like it's a sport for them. These are people that really, really have some issues going on. And you know what? I'm not sure who's more dangerous.
Mm.
I'm not sure who's more dangerous. The ones that smile and seem to have it together, that seem to have everything, but there's still something that is missing in their life, or that they've built up all of these materialistic cover fronts that they can bask in and look to, but it's not enough. Because God didn't create people to be satisfied with materialism. That's mm-hmm. just stuff that we've done to ourselves. God created a man and a woman because nothing is more fulfilling or satisfying than having that ultimate person in your life, the one that you can talk to and do everything you would do with friends and family. But then there's that intimate part that is exclusive to your partner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. There's no abuser in the world that's an abuser for sport.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is, that's something way deeper involved there, and that has to be addressed on more than just some, you know, walk-in outpatient therapy thing. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know that everybody that you find out has done this, if you get the opportunity to delve further into who they are, you'll finally get it. Now, a couple of ways we need to address these abusers. A, of course, usually when you address an abuser, normally it's when you are responding to a report of a disturbance. So the first priority there is to quell whatever it is that's making them angry at that moment. At that moment. That's what everybody's, that's the other thing, makes it selfish, you abusers. Because you are inflicting on everybody else's peace, and that's not a good thing. It's not even a right thing. And if this became something that became more of a law that is enforced and actually observed, you know, nowadays you have domestic violence laws in place, but something has to happen. Something has to happen before the law will take it seriously. Something has to happen. Complaints are not enough. You have to say, listen, there's situations where cops are called and the argument is right there. The stuff is happening. The victim will be telling this person, I'm afraid of you. Yes, there are the exceptions to the rule where you got some vindictive women that are out there that'll just say that, you know, he hit me and that would have been enough. And I understand it, you know, that there's so many alterations now to the law because the law is screwed up. It's always so black and white. Nobody's getting to the bottom of trying to figure out and understand the situation. But that still leaves a lot more people unprotected because now then you got this, everybody has a right to a trial thing. Okay, but now what happens? Everybody has a right to a trial. So now this, there are so many abusers that know how to filter and temper their anger long enough to let the police leave and believe that everything's okay, or pool of therapists and make them think that they got it, they understand, they're in whatever, and they're really going back to say, oh, this is how easy it is to get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they leave angrier than ever that they had to be subjected to this inconvenience, and they're angrier than ever. Tomorrow, ironically, we're going to be speaking about those people that have tried to leave abuse behind, have left the situation, but the abusers still feel they're entitled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is a big problem. This is a big problem. Getting back to why it is that all of this happens, I see you call this. Getting back to why all of this happens is something happened when they were younger or something happened in their adult life that nobody was there to actually help get to the bottom of it. You know, therapists are even overworked and underpaid. Or they're so busy looking for their dollars and cents in the private practice that what they're really there for or what they studied to get this degree for no longer is the sole purpose of why they're doing what they're doing. Very few therapists give a damn about actually curing someone that's a danger to society.
Hmm.
Everybody's pushing their new drugs that is supposed to treat one thing but affects 500 other things. So nobody is in it to get to the problem anymore.
Yeah.
The community support is gone. Black community support, period. Doesn't matter if it's community or not. Blacks just don't have support.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
hey, do you know something?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to say something real quick, and it just came back to my mind, so I don't want to lose my train of thought. You just really started making me think about that movie that Tyler Perry had brought out a while back, and it was about, you know, domestic abuse, and it didn't start out that way. As a matter of fact, the black guy was he was rich, but the thing was his mother had been on crack, so he carried that with him on through his childhood. He was a very high IQ individual and everything. And he was an abuser. You know, he wound up stealing another man's wife from him. I don't know. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, that was Temptation. And
yeah,
that was his play, The Marriage Counselor.
Yeah, he was so cool and smooth with it.
Right.
But underneath was just woof. It was hell brewing.
Made it dangerous. Now, domestic violence affects many people in many ways. Let's talk about it from a universal society standpoint. Rich people, they have a hard time getting help for domestic violence because either the person that's abusing them is rich and knows everybody that's supposed to make the difference.
Mm.
Okay? Mm. So that's one problem. Okay, if it's a judge doing it, if it's a police officer doing it, police officers got their brothers in blue code. I don't know if anybody saw the horror movie 100 Feet, but if you haven't, you need to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Was a cop's wife. She was abused to death. She made several calls, but every time a cop showed up to report, to answer the report, they were her husband's friends.
Oh,
so they pushed it under the rug. They took him out and let him walk it off for a while. He knew how to manipulate the system.
Hmm.
If it's a lawyer knows exactly what they're going to go look for. And this goes back to all of you that are in the abuser's role situation. You don't get the right to do this. Your strike of a hand destroys people's emotions and mentality, self-esteem. Then you have your enablers who walk around and don't want to make this little domestic abuse incident become a big thing and ruin a man's career or ruin a person's career. So the victim is now victimized twice over, and then you've seen the movies and you've heard the stories where now that victim is becoming an actual problem. So now let's go to a higher plot and get rid of the person altogether.
Mm.
So they paid a price with their life for loving you. When people in your life who should have loved you didn't, this is how you repay that love. Now you got the victim thinking they were stupid for loving you or questioning should being good be something that they do. No, you are the bastards. You. You don't mean to be, but you are. And the people around you allowed it to happen, who covered it up, who bailed you out, who gave you no consequence, they should be on trial as well. If they have accessory to murder, accessory to robbery, accessory to rape, accessory to a felony, why the hell don't they have accessory to domestic violence?
Hmm.
Why is domestic violence being treated like an ongoing disease, like alcoholism is? When all these alcoholics go to AA, they come out and they call themselves 20 years clean, recovering alcoholics. Why? Because at any given point in time, a smell, a old place, a former activity can bring it all back.
Mm-hmm.
Can bring it all back and make all this whole cycle start again. You abusers need to understand you are recovering criminals.
Mm.
You don't mean to be. You really are not the type of person that wants to rip up the heads of the dolls that you love, but you're doing it. And then you're bringing more people into it. And then you're letting them grow up to spread the vicious cycle. Black men, black women, I understand. I'm there with you. You can't walk out your house without you being a criminal. So why add to it? Why give them something else to say is a reason why? You got abusers that don't even care about their freedom because they continue to commit a crime. They continue to do exactly what they're doing because the cops have come in and given them a warning. Because somebody made them figure out how it is that they can get past the court system. You've got victims that have to find ways to serve their abusers with papers just to get them to come to court. They know all of this. So exactly how our abuse is being treated, you have to wait until they get one good one off. Meanwhile, there's a fractured bone somewhere. There's a bullet hole somewhere. There's a stab wound somewhere. And now there's attention to it. Let me bring in our other panelists. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
How are you doing, Katie?
Hey, Erica, welcome. All right, I got some questions for my callers, and the first one is, if you had to say something to someone you know that's an abuser, what would you say would be the thing that they must immediately address?
Their anger problem. Whatever anger issue they're holding inside, that's the first thing they must do, to come to grips and come to terms with why they're doing what they're doing. And some of them think it's justified. Some people think the person they're abusing deserve it, not realizing that you feel that way because you're angry at the moment.
They don't have the right to treat a grown equal partner as a child. That's what our oppressors do to us. They have their own sense of what civil and savage is.
Huh.
Who should be privileged and who should be enslaved. So my part B question to that is this. As much as we know about the underlying factors of domestic abuse on a universal society level, do you feel that there are more and additional unique factors to the black community that causes black domestic violence?
Yes, I do. Oh, yes, of course. My son is heavily into science, so we watched the episode Cosmos. That's the one that come on Fox with the black scientists. And he had a clip on his show about lead. And whatever guy in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, whenever it was, realized that lead was poisoning, he went to everyone saying, hey, you can't use this because it causes violent outbursts and it stops brain development. Well, where do you find the highest concentration of lead? In projects, hoods, due to the pain, the paint. So with that being said, if a person is suffering from lead poisoning, then and it causes violent outbursts, then of course that plays a factor in the black community and or to poor people. Then on top of the anger that our kids have to bear at an early age, the anger of watching the police drag your father off to jail for whatever reason, the anger of being poor. Being poor makes you angry. Being picked on makes you angry. Being hungry. Have you ever been hungry? You know what? I'm the sweetest person in the world, but starve me.
Well, that's a commercial.
You can be totally different America. So with that being said, yes, when you got all those things playing a role, and I have to remind people, what do they put in our water? We have no clue on what's in our water. We don't know what prescription has filtered into our water or who decided to flush some drugs down the toilet and it filtered into our water that causes some violent outbreaks. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not making an excuse for anybody being abusive, but you better believe it highlights it. It intensifies the need to be angry. You know, they say if you drink, if you're goofy, it's going to make you extremely goofy. If you're mean, it makes you meaner. That's the same with some of those things. When you have all those, you know, factors, you know, playing a role, then that makes you angry. And you have to have somebody to take it out on, because one thing we don't do in our community is teach one another how to deal with our anger. When we're mad, we don't tell or talk to one another and say, hey, let's communicate this. Let's talk this out. If I got a problem with Katie and I get angry, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, I'm going to hit her. Not, let me sit down with Katie and express to her how I'm feeling and what she did to me that made me feel the way that I felt. Because first of all, we all know showing a sign of emotion is a weakness. So it would be weak of me if I was to tell Katie, hey, you hurt my feelings, and you made me feel less than when you said this. But instead of doing that, the first thing we think to do is, Katie made me mad. You know what? I'm going to show her. I'm going to beat her up.
Yeah, well, let's look at the fact as well, Erica. You're so, like, on the perfect track that, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we also have support gone. If we ever had it at all, and I know that professor will be on a little later to probably expand on that. What kind of true, I'm working in your corner, advocacy groups and support are there out there? Okay, I was on a show with him that he was co-hosting earlier. The minute that he spoke about the words homosexual or gay or, you know, effeminizing, he got about 3 or 4 angry post. Well, we're just people. Why are you persecuting us? What's this? He wasn't persecuting. He was speaking on the fact that the gay culture seems to be what's being offered now as the new black, which I'm tired of hearing that. But to the abusers out there, they don't have anywhere to go in the black community. You mentioned quite a few community social and economic issues that are a big factor. Hunger, no jobs. You know, let's not even forget the fact that they've made every damn effort possible to desensitize us for what was once valued to us. Tell me right now, how many increased incidents do you see with children hating on their parents like they're strangers and parents doing the same? Babies are being born from one-night stands and plopped on the side of the road, dragged around like they're equal hangout partners when one is 4 and the other one's 44. What do we have anymore? What do we have ever? But what we did have that I believe we destroyed ourselves is that what you just mentioned, the community that used to teach the next generation how to deal with anger, how to respect your lady, how to respect your man, how to keep your house together, how to value your house first. If you remember, the same way we used to hear that saying that what goes on in this house stays in this house, you also equally used to hear that you first protect your home. I mean, that used to even apply to people that were cheating on their wives. You make sure that your home is taken care of first and everything else comes after. Where the hell is that mentality now? That's gone. It's done. It's over. It's over. And we are continuing to keep on throwing fuel to that fire and making that fire bigger. But with all of that being said, dear abusers, you don't have the right to destroy what's in your past. You don't have the right to take your wife and kill her. You don't have the right to look at your child and get pissed off that he's a better man than you at a young age because you weren't taught how to be one. Deal with your issues before you start asking to cohabitate with anyone. If you have the ability and the persistence and the consistency to pursue a person until they give in, not giving a damn where they came from, what kind of hurt that they were overcoming, what kind of stuff that they built themselves up from, how many scraped knuckles and busted eyes did they finally get away from that last monster? And at least that monster left them alone. You continued on and gave a worse or him a worse life because, A, they got to look at themselves now and say, damn it, I was out of this and I trusted this person and I'm in it again and now it's worse because this one won't leave. How dare you? And how dare your parents allowing you to do it? And how dare you mothers enable your sons? And how dare you fathers ignore your daughters and your sons? How dare you? I understand the society is not in there, but you have the right to choose. You clearly have to see that if you don't like the bruise you put on her face, it shouldn't have been there.
You know what, Cage?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I honestly can say is a parent knows their child, especially a mother, but a parent knows their child. My sister was watching CSI today. I think it was your Criminal Minds or something like that today, but I caught the last 15 minutes of the show drew me in because a child came up missing, and they found the killer who was kids came up missing, and they found the killer. But one child, they was trying to figure out how he fit into the puzzle. But long story short, the brother actually killed the kids, and the parents had a best friend that was a detective, and he just threw the child in there because he figured that the guy would be convicted anyway, so what's one more body? But the son that killed his brother, he was a sociopath. And the thing with sociopaths is they give you signs. Early on, you get the sign of a sociopath. With that being said, if you pay attention to your kids, you know them. I watch my kids so much until I know if we're sitting in a room and one of my kids lose their manners, I know exactly who did it. I know my kids, and I'm saying I just know them to the T, but I spend so much time with them, learning them, studying them, and analyzing them. I try to learn their ways. If I see one of them getting angry and having a fit about something, I instantly correct it and teach them how to redirect that anger. I sit back and I watch kids and I analyze kids. I had a friend who has a son, and he's borderline sociopath, but at the same time, I watch how his mother is raising him as well. He was 7 at the time, and he pulled a knife out at my daughter. on my daughter.
Oh,
God. A 7-year-old pulled a knife out on an 11-year-old. This child is at school stealing from the teacher, slapped the little girl, punched the little boy in his mouth and broke his tooth. And when I talked to my friend about it, she said, when stuff happened at school, I don't believe everything my child say, and I definitely don't believe everything the school say, because teachers lie and they make stuff up. But everybody's not telling the same lie. So if you always get a report from your child that your child has done something that's violent, when is it going to click in your mind that, hey, this isn't normal? It isn't normal for a child in kindergarten to always get into violent outbursts with other kids. Something's wrong with it. Parents turn a blind side because they feel it's a flaw on their parental page when something's wrong with their child. They're embarrassed and ashamed. Don't be embarrassed and don't be ashamed. Call it for what it is and get your child help so that they won't be an adult doing these behaviors.
Uh-huh. And there we go again.
That's the first thing most parents want to do. They want to not look at it and try to sweep it under the carpet before someone else sees it because they're embarrassed. I can tell you all of my kids' flaws right now, and I'm not ashamed of it. The reason why is because my kids were born from two humans, not robots. So since they were born from two humans, they have human flaws just like every other child on this planet.
And a robot is only as good as its programmer, so you're absolutely right. A robot and a computer program is only as good as its creator. So with that being said, they have flaws too. But you're right about one thing. You're right about a lot of things that you said in there. I mean, there's something I want to expand on, and then I want to bring in our other two panelists. We are too busy worried about what the hell an image shows. There are too many young kids coming in with their mindset. Do you guys remember the story about that? What was it, the third grader that shot up the school? You're talking about kids that are being brought into the principal's office because a 7-year-old told another 7-year-old girl that he's going to rape her if she doesn't kiss him or say hello.
Oh.
And when you ask the 7-year-old what does he mean by rape, what does rape mean to him, he can tell you word for word and action for action what that means. When you've got a 6-year-old referring to a female as a bitch, we have problems, people. And if you as the abuser saw this happen, and every time you heard your daddy call your mama a bitch or smacker, you cringed, obviously it was a bad feeling for you, so what do you think you're giving to the next people? We have got to do better. Let me bring in our panelists so that they have their time as well. Amon, welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Katie and fellow panelists. This is Professor Carl Tone Jones.
Hi, let me bring the panelists behind you, and you have the mic first, Professor.
All righty.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hi, Katie.
Hey, darling.
Hi. Hi, panel.
Hey.
Hey,
all right. Okay, Professor, go ahead, because I was waiting on you, dude.
Well, first of all, thanks for joining us earlier today on the State of the Black Parent, Katie. Definitely appreciate your input, and I look forward to hopefully hearing from a lot of you also. I now have my own blog talk radio show that will be airing weekly from 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 9 p.m. on A Legacy of a Nation's Network, and it is titled On the Porch with Professor Carl Jones, Carl Tone Jones, as I broadcast live from the porch in here in North Philadelphia. So
all right.
I hope you guys
all right.
Are
all right.
Tune in.
Also,
going to make sure that I maintain my status here with you guys here, because I love what we're building and I love the direction that we're going in. You know, in addressing something that you guys were just talking about in terms of parents and their enabling their children to become these monsters, I think it's something that is something that we need to address from a therapeutic perspective in some cases, because a lot of times the parents have been abused themselves at some point. And usually in these cycles, the cycle of abuse is basically abuse begets abuse. So it becomes sort of a regularity or a normalcy and so forth. But this is not our culture. And I like to point that out, that we as Africans in America, we are not privy to this type of relationship, but due to stressors, Erica brought up not being able to eat, you know, being hungry, that's a stressor. What's even more stressful is watching your children and not being able to provide for your family, you know. And sometimes those financial stressors, we get tied in and caught in. And, you know, it's hard enough being black in this country and then being a black man or a black woman. We have some differences in terms of the things that society will put us through, but the same token, we're still in the same bag when it comes to institutional racism and white supremacy and so forth. So when we address this issue, of domestic violence and domestic abuse, it's dealing with a caveat of additional issues. Like we were talking about earlier, Katie, off the air, the black community, there's no support groups. You know, there's no real support. We don't have the money invested in those things. Where here in Philadelphia, I listen to sports talk radio all the time, just because I hate the Philadelphia Eagles and I want to hear, you know, I love gloating about their demise. So one of the commercials that comes on all the time, and it might play up there in New York too, it might play all over the country, is a commercial where these team of lawyers are speaking to men as to, you know, having a system set up so that they can adequately assist them in court in terms of dealing with their significant other if they're having marital problems. And we don't have those type of programs set up in our communities like that, where somebody can actually go and talk to somebody can get counseling. More often than not, we send people to the church to talk to the pastor, but then again, the pastor is right there. Everybody knows the pastor, so it's kind of biased. You're getting biased information and biased feedback because it's already somebody who's dealing with you who knows what's going on. We don't have that. Yeah, we don't have that separate entity, that isolated entity with that unbiased opinion about how can we deal with these things, how can we deal with these stresses. And a lot of times, most people are so stressed out, they don't want to hear about your stress. They want you to talk about them and their stress and helping them deal with it. But let's get back to the cultural thing real quick. I'm not trying to take up everybody's time, but culturally, you know, there's no history of domestic abuse between Africans. You can go back and all throughout the whole continent and throughout the millions of years of our history that people can chronicleize, and there was no abusive nature in that. But when you go back and you chronicleize the European history, and you can see, you know, it was a savage situation where, you know, people were beating and killing one another, and the women were just used for procreation, and oftentimes even emulated in their cartoons. When you would see the caveman cartoons and the caveman would beat the woman over the head with a club and then drag her by her hair and things of that nature. So you're feeding that already into the culture. You're feeding that into the culture. And what's happening is we're adapting their culture. So our culture of violence becomes our culture of violence. And we don't have the resources or the outlets. Believe me. The domestic abuse happens in all communities, but it's exacerbated in our community because when it happens, it's out in the open. We can't hide behind. We can't close doors. We can't, you know, everybody has to get up and go to work. So if somebody has a black eye, you see it. So we can't hide it, but it's not our culture. And that's the one thing I wanted to say. We've adopted the culture of abuse, and that's one thing we need to find ways to expel that, and maybe we need to have like a Rihanna come and do an exorcism or something and get that out of our community.
You said exorcism. Okay. All right, darling, before I go to you, I want to expound on that last thing you said, because to me that's a real big pet peeve, and it's something that annoys the hell out of me on a daily, minute-to-minute basis, Professor. The lack of support to the black community. Now, there are advocacy groups in place for these things. There are support places you're supposed to go. There's a national alliance this. There's a national organization for that. But when it comes down to those things being offered on to society on a whole, they design these things to restore, repair, renew, rebuild, and protect their own. They'll take whatever garbage, trash position you put yourself in, but you're still one of theirs. You deserve a chance. You deserve restoration. Now, they offer that same open door policy to the EEOC Act or whatever it is, but they're not designing themselves or offering or allowing us to be accessed into those places for the same reason. What they give us is the newest drug that the FDA is experimentally putting out there. They already have us pegged for labeling. They're already trying to find yet another excuse why this person needs to be institutionalized. There's nobody out there that's trying to say, I understand your frustration, like you said. They have role-playing in some of these other cultures' advocacy groups, specific and unique to the customs of that culture. For example, there's certain things that Latinos were brought up believing and taught. So they have advocacy groups in place that address the psychology of that particular culture to help them break the cycle of imprisonment or oppression. How most of these women have a mentality that they're born and bred for man. We don't have that. Nobody's addressing the post-traumatic stress disorder from slavery times. Nobody's addressing the fact that while we had ancestors that were a lot more cultured in their thinking, they were sort of limited in the way they could express it because they came from a place that they were literally in the mess. So nobody is tailored to the black needs, and that's a problem. And then nobody is deeming us worthy enough of fixing or helping. So we are definitely dealing with all of the extras of society's garbage on top of what's unique of that garbage to make it more garbage for the black community. And then we're not even deemed as something to be pitied or empathized with to work on. They're not trying to help us. They're trying to get us through and move us along. There was a joke that they made when the 911 attacks took place, you know, the aftermath, where they were saying that certain areas of Manhattan were given the treatment, the best treatment. They were definitely hitting the books to get them insurance claims in. They were definitely out there making sure everybody was protected from asbestos, everybody's mesothelioma or whatever took place from breathing in, all of that stuff was handled. All the insurance companies were directed to accept anything that was dealing with treatment to counteract the effect. But when you got to another area, they were given baby wipes and a gas mask. That was a joke in a political cartoon, which wasn't damn funny at all. So it's back to us again. What is it we're going to do? Because we're our only support. And if we're so busy trying to achieve their status, trying to play their game, trying to be in their good graces, what exactly do we offer ourselves? We're never going to be able to see and focus on what it is that's here in front of us. Meanwhile, our children are being sucked up in a vacuum. They're being emasculated, eviscerated, literally. They're being harvested. They're being tracked. They're being trapped. They're being shot, imprisoned, and feminized. They're being projected as idiots, criminals, family separators, divide and conquer. We're sitting up there allowing and embracing everybody else just as human beings, allowing them to come in and infiltrate themselves and implement themselves on things that are specifically designed for us. I don't know about any of you, but all of us are at the age where we can remember the Soul Train Awards. And Dionne Warwick had a huge fit about the fact that George Michael was allowed to be entered into the nominee circle. As good as his music was, as soulful a sound as he had, she said, this was for our people, the one little thing we have. They should not be privy to it. I was about 10 years old when that came out, and I remember it like it was the break of day because she affected me with it. Because I have a damn problem with Iggy Azalea and Macklemore being part of rap and hip-hop nominations, Best R&B Soul of the Year. Are you kidding me? Darlene, babe, you're up. And actually, I had two questions that I was asking all the new callers. So my first one was, if you had to tell an abuser something that they must address immediately, what would it be? And two, with everything we know about the subliminal causes of abusers becoming abusers, do you believe that there's additional contributing factors on top of all of that that's unique to the black community becoming abusive?
Well, most definitely, Katie. Me, with my mind, I went all the way back. And I would just like to open up the mind for a minute. And for me, I believe that it all starts from when we're carrying our children. And the reason why I say that is because, okay, we know our ancestors were raped by the master. Mixing of the genes, mixing of races, that's an imbalance, so to speak. It can cause an imbalance because we don't know their history. We only know part of ours on a personal level. When we're carrying our seeds, when we're carrying the babies, they give us medication. We don't know what's in that medication, but we take it anyway for the development of our children. Any medication that is given to a person has a side effect. We don't know what that side effect really may cause. So I don't believe that a child is just grows up to be that way. I believe that it has to stem from cells. It's something in the at birth, so to speak, because between the mixing of the races, between the medications that we take that we really just don't know what they are, we only go by what they say, by the foods we eat because we don't really know what's in our food, by the water we drink because we don't really know what's in our water. Remember when we used to, when we had children, they were born, they couldn't see, they couldn't talk, and they couldn't hear in the beginning of the first month or so. They grew into that. After 6 weeks, they could see. You know what I'm saying? These kids are now being born walking, talking, with teeth coming out, screaming, and all kind of stuff. So even though the time has changed by worldly, does not necessarily mean that the development of our unborn children should have changed also, and that's what has changed. That's what has changed, and I believe it has everything to do with our intake. What we eat, everything we eat, they are more in control of. Everything we take or medications, they are in control of. Every medication has side effects. When you take a medication for this, then you got to take a medication for that, for the side effect for that, and a medication for that, and that, and that. And even though we may ask what these medications are, we don't really know if that's what they're giving us. So just watching the difference in a child being born today has convinced me that it starts from when we're carrying our children. And like one time Arlene said, that they have studied us from day one. And the only way that they can get to us real easy is our intake and to cause imbalances in our brainstem. Because I really feel, I really believe that it's an imbalance, because at one time our ancestors got beat, stomped, foot cut off in the whole shebang. But they wasn't beating their wives. They starved. They were hungry. They experienced all the things that we wouldn't even dream of experiencing. But they still stay family oriented. I'm not going to allow myself to believe that because there's days I'm hungry, I don't punch nobody in their face. You understand what I'm saying? So I truly believe that it's the person's personality, and I believe that an imbalance has been caused somewhere down the line between the mixing of the races, the genes, the incest, the food, the water, the fruit, the vegetables, the everything. Because we wasn't known for violent tendencies. Now all of a sudden it is becoming an epidemic. Something is wrong, and I don't think it's just on a physical. I think it's internal. And the other question that you asked was that, what would I suggest for a person? The first thing a person has to do is accept it. First, they have to realize that they have a problem before anything can be done.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And we have these men out there that they're taught the macho thing from birth. Then they're dealing with, okay, if I'm so macho, why am I getting beat down by a cop? Why am I being told that I'm not worthy of a job? Why am I not allowed good education? Why is my girl sitting up there telling me I'm worthless? So we have that confusion because they're not feeling very macho. I don't know how many of you follow Cat Williams, but he did a stand-up in 08 in D.C. where he said, if you guys don't understand, he was talking about how the white culture likes to mess with nature, that they have a tiger in a zoo. And he said that this is a tiger. This is a big, loud, powerful beast that you see on National Geographic on the back of a big wildebeest just biting them up. But he's in a cage in a fake habitat, and he's a real tiger. And he's saying, this is about the kid that the grown person that got mauled by the tiger and died in the zoo because he climbed over the fence trying to be a bigwig. And everybody was going after the tiger, put the tiger to sleep. And he said, you're going to go after the tiger? And he was the only real player in the whole equation. He was doing what comes natural to him. You guys interfered with his life.
Exactly. But that's what I'm trying to say, Katie. In order for them to get us where we are today, they had to play with us mentally. They had to play with us mentally. They had to alter our mentality. You understand? Because that's the only way to get a group on a big level like that. If you know, listen, we talking about people who have studied us for years and years and put a plan in place. We're not talking about somebody just woke up and said, oh, I don't want black people to have anything. Let's make a plan. No, this was something that they planned years and years and years and years ago. So in order to affect a person on any level, you have to basically start with the mind. And once you tamper with the mind, everything else will follow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have to got to address, we have to do our part. As, like I said, the circle around these abusers. We have to stop, Professor, we spoke about it, Erica, we've spoken about it, Al-Tariq, the enabling. We have got to stop it. We have to stop the enabling of the oppressors to continue to further divide us. But first and foremost, we have got to address the anger issues. We have got to stop having to be able to only speak to our people when we're responding to a report or trying to stop somebody from banging the head of someone they're supposed to love.
We have to
stop chasing the image that doesn't exist for us.
You know, Katie, one of the things I'm glad you all brought that up, and Dolly, I'm glad you brought that up about the anger thing. You know, something we don't take into consideration when we talk about these, we always talk about the social aspect of it. And, you know, there was something that Dick Gregory was talking about one time. We were talking about how there's the most violent city in the world is in Australia. And a lot of people don't know this, but it's right outside of a chemical factory. It releases these fumes, and the fumes that it releases causes such anger that people just start killing each other on the street. And if you ever look up in the sky, you'll see planes crisscrossing and making patterns and leaving chemtrails all through the sky. You never actually question what the hell those things are. It's just become so commonplace now that people will look and may notice it, but we really don't take that into the equation. Also, you have to take into the equation that our diets. Our diets are one of the things that fuels us, and a lot of times we're taking in fossil fuels in terms of our diet, especially when you ingest high fructose corn syrup. And what that does sometimes is it fosters a lot of angry, anxiousness, and whatever inside. So all of that includes with all of that combined with the medication, combined with the stress, all these things factor in. And then we talk about the upbringing, and then you talk about the fact that there might be some damage to that child before that child is even born based on what the intake was of the parent while they were pregnant and so forth. You know, we have a whole lot of mitigating factors that need to be looked at with a fine-tooth comb and under a microscope when addressing that anger. Now, the first part of your question was, what would we say to that person? I don't think I had a chance to address that. And
no.
The first thing I would say to a person who is dealing with who is an abuser is, brother or sister, you need to get some help. And when they say, you know, that question, well, what is wrong? I just don't agree with what you did. And A, B, and C. I love you. I got love for you. But at the same time, this is coming from a place of love. You're going to hurt somebody, and eventually this is going to lead to somebody dying. And I'm real dramatic when it comes to telling people things, because I feel as though when you sugarcoat something or you try to tell it to them in layman's terms, sometimes you don't necessarily – the message doesn't get through. So I always try to make sure that even if I have to utilize shock value or shock factor and so forth, that if I'm telling them this, I'm letting them know the extreme of this potential behavior. And that's one of the things that I would actually tell somebody if I was aware of their situation and possible abuse that was going on.
Oh, that's awesome. There's another panelist coming in. There's like 12 minutes left, so let me bring them in. Hold on. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? This is Q.
Hi, Q.
Hey, how you know? Well, as you know, I'm a former abuser in my teenage years, and I will agree with what the brother just said and what some of the things you guys said earlier. I just counseled a little young dude yesterday that I was walking by, a couple arguing, and he slapped her hand. And, you know, I think that sometimes males have to take a male off to the side and educate him on something he might not be aware of, kind of like the brother was just saying. And I wish ladies would do it with ladies, but I don't see enough ladies do it because a female abuser many a time feels entitled to do it. And like when you saw the example with Teen Mom, just to throw some quick examples, let you guys know I'm not just throwing out some emotional opinion. You look at Teen Mom. When she was punching the guy who was taller than her, bigger than her, America thought it was funny. until males raise the point, well, that's abuse. Shouldn't you guys be calling the police? And then finally she was arrested. Finally, in the next season, she was arrested. So America let the abuse go on TV for a whole half a season when they thought it was funny. Let me show you another example. When Miss Osborne was on her talk show to the ladies, and they made the point of male mutilization, and I'm just proving a point here. The whole female audience laughed when Miss Osborne said, you know, cut it off and put it in the garbage disposal and watch it just whiz around. Everybody thought it was funny until people wrote in, mostly males, isn't that the same thing as clitoral abuse? So when we talk about this particular topic, I'm glad that the last gentleman said it the way he said it. You have to speak to a person where they are if you want some type of result in the end. Because as a former abuser when I was 16, for people running up talking about you evil, you this, you that, you the man, you'll never get fixed that way. The brother said the key word, and I'm going to back up as I say this. He said, I love you, but what you're doing is wrong, and the end result may be this. A guy who's abusing, a woman who's abusing, they need to hear that if you're really trying to help them.
Q, I completely agree. It's pretty much what we've been saying for the last 2 hours. Absolutely. I don't find anything funny with anybody hitting on anyone. I've seen way too many good men who were brought up correctly, who have taken physical abuse from the women they love, and as much as they wanted to, I've seen their fists clenching. I've seen their mouths. I've seen them trying to battle not just the anger of being hit, but knowing that there's people in the street watching it. Nothing's funny about it. Nothing's funny. But there are too many enablers, and there are too many people pointing the finger. But understand that as an abuser, the image that people see make it very hard for them to understand the pain behind it, which is the problem we have to get to. Because the only way you can actually approach that person to get to the bottom of it is when they're not angry and pounding on someone. It's going to take somebody bigger than them when they're in the heat of the moment to subdue them and then get the soak up. That's a lot of work. But if the abusers don't get in their head that at some point in time you are going to have to be able to produce yourself and project yourself as a human being worth empathy, so people could get to the bottom of why you are that way or what's the frustration with you delivering communication without your fist. And frankly, as far as a lot of these women abusers get in the way, oh, yes, we women definitely got a lot of stepping up to do. But in the same token, guys need to start stepping up and getting past the what do I look like doing this and start pressing some damn charges. They got to start pressing charges regardless of who's laughing at them. That is the problem. It's too much machoism when there's a need for repair. And that's where we have to get to the point of understanding. To hell with image. There's a problem. Our boys are walking around sagging their damn pants and beating up on 14-year-old girls while they're 14 because of image. One passed down to them, one instilled upon them, one that's being displayed to them. Men got to step up just the same way women do. And I blame women a whole lot more for enabling their grown sons because of a woman parent does that a lot faster than a man will. A woman parent. And not to mention that there's quite a couple of cultures, Caribbean mainly, Latino second, that will enable the hell out of their grown son. It's not a dig at anybody's specific culture. It's just a very widespread observation. They believe that there is no wrong in their boys. They interfere in their boys' marriages against the wife. There's people that watch their sons beating the hell out of their wives in front of them, won't call a policeman, and will definitely call anybody an enemy that will. This is a problem.
And too many of our men are walking around angry, no place to put it, as Erica has pointed out on several segments in this week. And that is a problem because the hitting is coming from lack of communication, frustration. Now they've lost their biggest supporters, which was their black queens, and that doesn't happen anymore.
But, Katie, I'd just like to ask you and the panel, because, you know, I need some help in that area with this situation, because for the most part, the men that I've known, not so much all of them had to be personal, but people that I just know, men that have been abusive. For the most part, I would say out of 50 men, if you ask them why they do it, 30 of them will say they don't know. Why do you do that? I don't know.
I had a couple say, I just get so mad. And then my next question always is about what? And when they try to bring me something that's happening in the here and now, I say, yeah, but that wouldn't bring up that type of reaction. What else is going on?
Right.
And you know something, ladies, if we got a male abuser who's not abusing us but abusing someone else, and we sat down and we spoke to them like they're actual human beings, when they're not angry, when they're just kicking it or doing whatever, we may get to the bottom of it. And then we can channel them into going to seek help without making it seem like it's something they should be ashamed of. We might get somewhere. And if we could start emulating our men again and making them feel like we understand you are going through hell. Society hates you. Everybody's trying to bring you down. That you need to do something that's not being offered to you. I know you want to, but this is the way you deal with it, and know that I'm in your corner. But you guys, I'm telling you now, I have seen friends, and we are down to a few minutes, but I have seen friends that pat their buddies on the back over a drink after they watch their buddies punch their girl in the face.
Mm-hmm.
That's not funny. And they'll be the first person, if that type of guy dated their daughters and did that, to be talking about how they're going to rip something apart. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't have it both ways. And for you parents that were the abusers that watched your kids grow into adulthood, repeating the cycle, now is not the time for you to get ashamed and shut up. Now is the time for you to say, whoa, I know what you're going to say. I did it too. And I blame myself for watching you do this. But it's wrong. Now, considering that we're down to our last 2 minutes, do allow me to let you know what tomorrow's conclusion on this series is going to be. It is going to be called Battling Domestic Violence, the Exit Wound. We're going to be speaking about the fatalities that happen when an abuser who is long removed from the person they victimized and don't want to let go because they were not taught that they're not entitled, how that happens, how you deal with letting go of what you've cut yourself off from and moved on from. All of this will be addressed tomorrow night, and I encourage everybody to be in, because I will let you know that currently I am dealing with a domestic violence situation, one that I've left a long time ago that doesn't seem to want to let me go. And I got to tell you what it is I've had to deal with, and I'm dealing with other people in the situation and what they're dealing with, and this is what we will have to do. And this is where all of us as a community step up and hold the community who is in place to help this stop happening, be accountable for what they fail at. Because if we don't, it continues. So until tomorrow night, everybody, and before we go, Deacon Zeddy Williams, much praise to you from us. You know, it's not looking good for him, and it's, you know, we're all a family here, so you guys please let him know that you're praying for him.
Yeah, in my prayers.
And reach
definitely
out. Please call him. I say hello. But he's an intricate part of the community where he is here on this panel. Professor, thank you as always. Erica, you know, I thank you. Stay low, Al-Tariq, I know you hung up, darling, but All of you guys are priceless to me. I'm honored to be among all of you. You are great people in every way that counts.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Well, I think